It is The Drive with Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. Spent a lot of time there talking Jim Harbaugh, Michigan. A couple of texts on the U of I Atlanta League text line. 309 says Bears' new head coach, Jim Harbaugh.
I think it's going to happen. I do.
I mean, it can't be worse. It can't be worse than Matt Eberflus. He'd be a big upgrade, very big upgrade. Don't get me wrong.
I kind of want to pull up that Eberflus press conference. That was unbelievable.
You can search for it right now if you want to. I'll read through a couple more of these. You can call me Sal says, the Bears should do a Cubs, hire Andy Reid away from Kansas City. If only, right? Only was that easy. Maybe he's tired of all the Taylor Swift and Brittany Mahomes and all of that. And he just wants to get out, go to a place where you don't have that type of situation. Or maybe your quarterback's not good enough to have a famous spouse or whatnot. I'm sure he'd be looking forward to that. But hey, you know, the Bears could have two very, very high draft picks. Look, it's not going to be Andy Reid. It could be somebody. It could be somebody that they could, I don't know if they'd pull away someone from another team. It would be
an offensive coordinator. I don't know if you're pulling away a head coach to coach the Chicago Bears right now. I hate to tell you.
Here comes Bill Belichick to Chicago. Oh, my. No. Yeah, no, I wouldn't want that.
No, I was going to say 10 years ago for sure, even 5 years ago, you would have thrown a party here if Bill Belichick was coaching the Chicago Bears. Now, no. It's just he's no. No.
Have you seen their offense? Their offense is pretty poor. His drafting, because he's been in a situation where he is like essentially the coach and GM, and his drafting has been pretty bad, especially at wide receiver, and they don't have a quarterback situation that is very desirable. So Bill Belichick would not be my choice. If there's another obvious one out there in terms of trying to steal someone away from another team, please, I'm all ears. Otherwise, yeah, let's get an offensive mind in there, offensive coordinator from somewhere. Maybe Mike McDaniel doesn't like the sun anymore down in Miami. It's a little too hot.
I think he's good with it.
Okay. All right. I'm just spitballing here. Scott in Terre Haute says, the Bears need a W tonight, so I'm watching. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm going to have it on my TV screen. But the Bears need to win because I think that's our best chance to get the top pick. Carolina being able to tank all the way out would be great.
I also think from a fan perspective, like if you beat Carolina tonight and it's pretty apparent that Carolina is going to get the number one pick, then you can really like buy back into like if Justin Fields comes back every week rooting for success for the Chicago Bears, you don't have to straddle the line of like, well, why did we win that game? Gosh. You can actually be happy if the Bears win games because you know you're still going to get the number one pick.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Is that a fair, like, is that a factor at all? It would be.
I want Justin Fields to play well regardless. That's why I'm upset he's not playing tonight. And on that note,
can I play this?
Please do. Yeah. Matt Eberflus being asked about Justin Fields listed as doubtful. Although, is he out? Yes, he's out. Wait, no, he could play. Here's Matt Eberflus from yesterday.
Like you said, he's not medically cleared to go right now. And he's getting better, though. I mean, he's accuracy's improving, he's throwing it better, and you know he's starting to do more and more and more. So we'll see where it goes. And right now we're listing him as doubtful, and we'll see where it goes from there.
If he's not medically cleared, well, how come doubtful versus out?
Yeah, just to see. We got to give him one more day. But he's working hard, and it's getting better every day. So we'll see where it goes.
He's not playing tomorrow.
Yeah, he's not playing.
Hasn't the medical staff seen given the clearance yet? What are they telling you?
What's that?
What is the medical staff telling you in terms of why they haven't given him the clearance?
Yeah, it's really just the clearance is just, you know, obviously he's got to be cleared to play with the medical staff, you know, and so it's really about him feeling good about it and the medical staff saying that he can go in there and function, and he's just not there at this time.
Is it an issue of grip strength or?
It's everything. It's all improving. You know, the grip strength, the accuracy, the ability to function as a quarterback. It's just, it's all right there. It's getting close.
I'm having trouble understanding. He's not playing, but he's doubtful. Is he out or doubtful?
Right now he's listed as doubtful.
But you're saying that he's out. He's not going to play.
We'll see where it goes. The chances are doubtful, 51% that he's in or out, and it's going to be, we'll see where it is. We got a little time left, but again, we'll declare him out when he's out. Right now, we're still listing him as doubtful.
But will he go through any?
What? What was that?
51% that he's in or out.
Oh my God!
What does that mean?
Yeah, he's out. No, he's doubtful. Wait, 51% that he's in or out. What in the world is happening?
The person I pulled this tweet from, Brian Perez, who writes for the Bears, his caption on the tweet was, "I don't know if this is Matt Eberflus or Michael Scott in an Eberflus disguise."
That's a good one. Yeah, I could totally see that being a Michael Scottism for sure. But it's bad, man. He's terrible in front of a mic. He's not a good football coach, as far as a head coach at least. My life is more enjoyable when I pretend like the Bears season is already over. The problem for me as a fan is that I pretended like baseball season was over starting at the end of July, and then I am now have been pretending that the Bears season's been over since, not really pretending because it is, since really ever since they lost to the Packers. Maybe not that soon, but you know what I mean. For a long time
now.
That
was an indicator of what the season was going to be.
That was such a stiff kick in the you-know-where of reality. I want to watch Justin Fields succeed. I still do. And I know that I'm not in a camp that is unanimous. There's a lot of people who would love to see the Bears be as bad as possible and to put the best situation to have pick one and pick two, Panthers and Bears, in whatever order that happens, and take Caleb Williams and then take Marvin Harrison Jr. And I would understand that. I understand that want. I personally am not. I think Caleb Williams is a very talented quarterback. I think there have been some indications. The Notre Dame game, not to say that Justin Fields didn't have an off game. He did, actually. His final year at Ohio State, I think it was the Big Ten championship game against Northwestern. He was pretty poor in that game, but then obviously was electric in the college football playoff against Clemson. So you can have off games, and obviously Caleb Williams shouldn't have to own the fact that he has one of the worst defenses in definitely in Power 5, if not the entire country.
Atrocious. I think Lon was brought up yesterday how there was one bowl projection that had Illinois and USC playing in a bowl game. Now, obviously, Caleb wouldn't play in that game, but Illinois' offense might put up their most points in the last 5 years if they played USC's defense.
Right?
Awful.
Isn't it sad, though? Like, because I saw Lon's tweet, and then somebody responded accurately that, hey, Lon, actually, Caleb wouldn't play. Right. Johnny Newton wouldn't play. And we've done this before. It's not a new thought by any means. It's just unfortunate that any bowl projection outside of the college football playoff, you'd be like, well, this guy wouldn't play. This guy wouldn't play. This guy probably wouldn't play. This guy maybe wouldn't play. And these are just like glorified exhibition games that don't mean a whole lot. So that part just bums me out, because it would be fun for an Illinois fan to say, you know what, this season hasn't been what I expected. They can go on a little bit of a run here, and while the Big Ten West probably isn't likely, what if we did end up in that spot playing USC? Wouldn't it be awesome if we just got to see what Illinois' defense looked like against Caleb Williams and then just, enjoyed a game of football that had everybody at full strength? Instead, it's like, oh, yeah, he wouldn't be there. No, he wouldn't be there. That just kind of bums me out.
Yeah, it does. And I don't know what necessarily you could do to fix that, because at the end of the day, you just can't blame these players for sitting out of the bowl.
I get it.
There's a lot of people that jump to it like, well, you got to stick it out with your team through the 13. I get that sentiment, but these guys have millions of dollars waiting for them in the NFL. And with as physical of a game as football is and everything, like, I get it. Like, what is there really to gain for these guys playing in a bowl game? Like, you're not playing for a championship. You're not playing. Me personally, I completely understand the fact that these players sit out these games. It doesn't mean I have to like it.
Right. Yeah.
But I understand it, and I don't necessarily know what the solution is, because it just – that's the bull structure is. I mean, you're going to expand the college football playoff, so there's at least going to be a few more games that matter. But, like, for Illinois' sake, let's be real with ourselves. Illinois is probably not making the college football playoff, at least in the near future. So as long as, the goal continues to be 7-8 wins and bowl games, and, you're not going to see maybe some of your best players play every year. That's just the reality. I know we've talked about it in the past of what could be done to fix this, and I just don't have an answer to that.
I just know that as I used to look at it as a fan, that a bowl win mattered in terms of like...
Yeah, but like...
I know it doesn't anymore.
Right.
Especially, and let's be honest, like if you won the Duke's Mayo Bowl and you had a recruit in on your campus and you show them the jar of mayo trophy, whatever the heck they give to the winner of that game to take home with them and show that they won the game, it's probably not wowing anybody. It's nothing that people want to hang their hat on and say, hey, you remember when we won the Duke's Mayo Bowl? Wasn't that a great statement win for our program and whatnot? But I used to feel like, you know, winning the Outback Bowl, if Illinois was ever in one, I mean, they technically were in it last year. But that mattered. That mattered in terms of growth of a program, statement in recruiting, whatever it might be. So I used to look at those games as things that actually carried weight, even though it wasn't winning a national championship. So it's unfortunate to me when you get those games that obviously we all want to watch. We all want to watch those. At least we used to. It felt like you go into through the holidays and different games are on, unique matchups that you don't see in the regular season, and to have a game that, I'm not going to say fully defined your season, but it could be a real, you know, nice cherry on top, or even more than that. I think it is more than that when you win a big bowl game.
Sure.
Now it's not that at all, because you can kind of use the asterisk of, well, this guy didn't play on the other side and we didn't play this guy. So it really doesn't matter, and it doesn't have the same draw as it used to. And this is not a perfect comparison, and it's going to be easily refutable, but this is the first thing that came to mind. What if, say, a top NBA prospect was on a middling bubble team that just makes the tournament, and he knows in his mind, now I know mathematically or theoretically or whatever you want to call it, everybody that goes into the NCAA tournament, and part of what makes it great is that anybody can beat anybody, theoretically, and that anybody can win the national championship. Now, we know that there are a lot of teams that might win a game, maybe, or there are a lot of, you know, mid-major teams that most likely are, you know, they're going to face the 2 seed and get thumped in a lot of situations. Now, yeah, some of the, you know, Purdue losing, whatever, have kind of maybe even reshaped our thoughts on what a 16 seed could do. What I'm getting to is, what if a high-level NBA prospect went into the NCAA tournament and said, my team's not going to win the championship, I'm not going to play in the NCAA tournament. How would we feel about that?
A lot differently, but I think it would be one. I see where you're going with that, but I think there is something to, yeah. Especially like when you're talking high-level NBA prospect, those aren't coming from 16 seeds. Like you're talking about an 11 seed who's in the play-in round, you know, on the first four in Dayton, on that type of team. But I think the beauty of the NCAA tournament is that, yeah, there is you're playing for a championship, even if you want to be real with yourself and obviously sit down and say, yeah, this 11-seeded Arizona State is not winning the national championship, which we all know is not going to happen going into the tournament.
Let's say James Harden's on that team.
As a team, you know that you have an opportunity to win a championship, and I think that's what changes the equation. And at the other factor is serious injuries and just injuries in general just aren't as prevalent in basketball as football.
That's
fair. Just the way it is.
That's fair.
The risk of injuring yourself in a football game is higher than in a college basketball game. So I do see where you're going with it, but it just my stance on it is that I totally am with you in that it stinks that we don't get the high-level players in these bowl games. If Illinois gets two of their last three and goes to a bowl game that we're all going to be very excited to watch, we know that Johnny Newton will not be playing in that game. Illinois' best player, and we've seen how the defense has looked when he hasn't been on the field. So it's going to hurt your chances to win that game. And that's you can feel bad about that, and you can hate that, and I do. But I don't at all blame Johnny Newton for making that decision, and I also don't know how you necessarily fix that in the big picture in college football, because – the end of the day, these bowl games, you're just not playing for a championship. You're playing for one extra win. And I think with the injury risk that comes with a football game and just the what's in front of these guys in terms of getting drafted, like I think getting hurt and ruining that far, far outweighs moving your record from 6-6 to 7-6 and winning the,
no, yeah,
what's it called, bowl.
Yeah.
You know?
That's fair. And I didn't mean to take it on a total tangent there. I just thought that that was something that came to mind on the note of Illinois-USC. And it's not.
We're going
to
have this conversation again in December if Illinois makes a bowl game and Johnny Newton sits out, you know?
Or just there'll be a matchup.
Yeah.
You know, pick the team that's not in the college football playoff that on paper, like, oh, this is a juicy matchup. And then watch all the players that opt out.
Well, think about, I'm trying to think, like, some of these quarterbacks. I guess, like, these Pac-12 quarterbacks aren't high NFL draft prospects.
Well, like, what if Washington didn't make the playoff?
Yep, that's where I was going. Like, Washington versus, you know, one of these other top.
Say Ohio State gets beat.
Rose Bowl. Yeah, let's say that. Rose Bowl is Washington, Ohio State with – actually, I think the Rose Bowl's in the playoff this year. Just bear with us on the example. Yeah. Ohio State and Washington missed the college football playoff. They were playing in the Rose Bowl, and Michael Penix Jr. sits out that game.
And Marvin Harrison Jr. sits out. Mecca Ibuka, and like all of a sudden it's just it's a different game that means so much less.
Totally.
Unfortunate. Randy on the U of I Line League text line. I don't like the players that skip the bowl game and still get their gift bags. There you go.
Now that's a fair opinion. I won't argue that.
How dare anybody on that Illinois team 2019? They would have went to the Red Box Bowl and got their like Red Box free rentals for a year gift card, and they decided not to play. Take them back. Now I'm using that kind of sarcastically, but no, I just. It's a complicated and nuanced discussion. There's no, in my opinion, there's no like black and white right or wrong. I'm not saying that players shouldn't have the right to sit out. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it's disappointing. And I do fully understand the heightened risk in football in particular as far as the injuries go. But to circle it back, yes, the Bears, whether they win tonight or not, I hope they win. I just want to watch Justin Fields play well the rest of the year. I'm still on that because I think that building around him is you make a very, very good point, though, Kyle, on the contract situation. Like, even if I thought that Justin Fields is a better quarterback prospect, which I don't know this to be true, but if he's better or close to as good as Caleb Williams, then, like, the contract could mean a lot, even though in my mind I'm sitting there saying I'd rather you use draft picks on other positions. It isn't a situation of like, well, then you're not going to use the compensation as far as the salary on the quarterback, because then it probably limits what you can do in free agency here pretty soon too. So it's a conversation we've had a number of times. I just wanted to bring that up as they go into tonight's game. One more text on the U of I Line League text line I wanted to get to. We were going to talk Big Ten basketball. We'll have to do that after this next break. Wade says, if John Paddock starts and has an awesome game, 300-plus yards and 4 touchdowns, Luke gets cleared for next week. Who's starting at quarterback? That would be going to Iowa.
It's an interesting question. I still think it'd be Luke, unquestionably. That's just how I see it.
I think it probably would be. It probably would be, but it would be more.
It's a discussion that would be had all week long if that happens.
It would be a more complicated decision.
But I just, to me, and I get it, you're going to be 5-5, a game away from a bowl, and you're probably still going to be in the West race. So obviously the short term is what you're focused on. But John Paddock is a sixth-year senior that's going to leave your program in 2 weeks. Luke Altmyer is your future at quarterback, and he has actually shown progress throughout the season. It would be really hard for me to imagine that they would start Paddock in that situation. But I get it that you're focused on who gives me the best chance to win against Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Not you're not focused on that. But that is in my mind as well. Like, Luke gets hurt to no fault of his own, plays pretty well leading up to that injury. He's the guy that you're trying to build your program around the next 2 years. Are you really going to go with the sixth-year senior that is giving you one? I don't know. And I don't think we'll have to worry about that. But
no, yeah, and I think that's a...
I think it's Luke's job as soon as he's healthy.
That's fair framing of it for sure. I do think that, let's say John Paddock is your starting quarterback against Indiana and plays really well, that even if Luke is your starter going into Iowa, there's probably a shorter leash around him in terms of how he plays, in terms of coming off injury or just in general his production. You might have a little bit of a quicker hook to go to John Paddock if there were some struggles, or, you know, however that might play out down the stretch of this season. So it's a good problem to have if John Paddock obviously builds on the Minnesota game and then goes out there and plays really well against Indiana, because you'd expect to win that game and then go and face the best defense you've played all year in Iowa City. So very interesting. Let's catch another break. Let's talk Illinois and just Big Ten basketball in general when we come back. I want to look around the Big Ten, give some thoughts as far as what teams have done so far within their first game. And we'll talk more Illinois-Oakland tomorrow, and maybe I can give some initial thoughts. We did meet with Brad Underwood today, as well as Luke Goody, just kind of initial gauge on what that matchup's going to look like tomorrow. So we can comment on that before we get done here. Let's catch a break. We'll return. This is The Drive.
You moved into your new home using two men and a truck. The garage was clean. Then,
I love the new recliner. What are we going to do with this old one?
Put it in the garage for now.
Over time, this cycle continued. It happens. You got junk. Call Two Men and a Truck to get rid of all your junk, residential or commercial. Two Men and a Truck has a solution for your junk removal. Contact them at twomenchampagne.com. Two Men and a
Truck. Since Busey Bank first opened our doors in 1868, we have built upon a tradition of close relationships and broad financial capabilities. Our experienced team provides the highest level of personalized service to ensure we accomplish your goals, simplifying your wealth management and business lending needs, and ensuring a legacy for generations. Building business, growing wealth, since 1868. Proud to be the official bank of the Fighting Illini. Member FDIC.
Saturday, November 18th for one night only at the Virginia Theater. Come out to the red carpet world movie premiere of the family-friendly comedy Irresponsible, starring Keith Campton. Parts of the movie filmed right here in our town and features dozens of local actors. Come and meet all the stars of the movie and ask questions, get pictures, and free autographs. Doors open at 6 p.m., showtime at 7. Virginia Theater, November 18th. For more information, go to thevirginia.org, thevirginia.org.
Join us for the live broadcast after 3 p.m. on Friday, November 10th. Great guests ahead of Dad's Day, including Jay Lehman, McLean Stahl, and Hans D. with Who You Got. Eric Meyer has great drink specials, terrific pub food like the Slugger Burger, Chicken Fingers, Loaded Nachos, and Fish on Fridays. Diane Ducey will be handing out tickets to the Illinois vs. Indiana game Saturday the 11th at 2:30 with the flyover as a salute to our veterans. Pia's 1609 West Springfield Avenue in Champaign.
With the leaves and temperatures beginning to fall, it's time to make sure those furnaces are in great running order. Get that furnace tuned up so it doesn't let you down on the cold nights. Dogtown is the people's choice number one HVAC company again in 2023. Ask about the current 0% financing offer on all Lennox high comfort systems and single component units for qualifying applicants. The number's 217-841-4728. Dogtown Heating, Air, and Plumbing, your home's best friend. Crossroads Contractor Supply specializes in the delivery of tools and supplies within a 150-mile radius of Champaign-Urbana. Reliable, timely, and with reasonable prices, Crossroads Contractor Supply knows what equipment and tools are needed for your job. Their slogan, "We have it when you need it." Get the job done right with proper tools and equipment. Did something break? Construction materials as well as safety equipment all available. Call 402-8123. Visit Crossroads Contractor Supply IL.
These days, you don't mind staying up a little late or waiting in line. These days, button downs turn into t-shirts, and dinner consists of popcorn and a pretzel. These days are about singing and yelling and jumping. These days are game days. Game day spirit, where Fighting Illini fans shop.
Jeremiah 29:11 states, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." What a comfort we have in this passage, as the Lord is telling Jeremiah, "I care for you and will take care of you." If you are in despair and think you have no hope, pray to the Lord for guidance. See how your life can be changed and the lives of those around you. This message brought to you by the Blossom Basket Florist.
Back on the drive at St. Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. Let's talk some Big Ten hoops. Michigan State back in action tonight on BTN, 6 p.m. against Southern Indiana. Probably going to get an angry Spartan squad after losing night one to James Madison.
I can imagine those practices with Izzo after losing to James Madison on opening night.
Man. Probably wasn't a pleasant few days for Malik Hall in particular.
Him and Hogard have had their back and forth throughout the years, too. I'm sure that didn't go great after he shot 2 for 11.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. Nothing in terms of, like, this isn't torpedo Michigan State season or anything.
No.
Obviously, it's night one. And James Madison was a decent team last year. I think they were a tournament team, won 22 games. So, I know they weren't ultimately a tournament team, but they won 22 games. They were a decent squad. But it showed that maybe Michigan State was a little overhyped as far as the national perception going into this year. We'll see. I mean, they shot the three well as a team last year. Like of course, Joey Hauser, who they no longer have, but also I think Tyson Walker and both Jaden Akins were pretty high percentage guys as far as the three ball goes. So they have some shooters. But losing Hauser maybe wasn't talked about as much as it probably should be. And I still think that for Michigan State to have the guards they have, to have the appeal that they have as a program, to not be able to go out and get a better big man than Matty Sissoko is unbelievable. I think that's just flat-out stubbornness by Tom Izzo and really sacrificing an opportunity to utilize that backcourt to build a legit Final Four team, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, 100%. And that part of the reason why I said a couple weeks ago that I was shocked that this is all of a sudden the number four team in the country. I think they're still going to be pretty good because of that backcourt, but they didn't address the front court issues at all except bringing in a very raw five-star freshman who Izzo played 5 minutes in the
first game.
It's
already in the doghouse.
So clearly he is not ready to play in the Big Ten, according to Tom Izzo. And that was the guy that was supposed to be the reason that he – that Michigan State was going to jump into the top five in the country. I think this backcourt is really good. They're not going to shoot 1 of 20 from three. Almost, they might not shoot that again all year. But number four in the country, I never understood it because we saw this exact backcourt lose 13 games last year.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't go out and get a portal big. They didn't even replace Joey Hauser and his shooting in the lineup. They're playing Malik Hall, who has been injured for the last 2 years and looked horrible.
Injured and inconsistent. A guy that they've thought to be a breakout into a marquee player for like the last three seasons, and it hasn't happened.
It just never made sense to me that they were – the conversation of having like a bunch of people picking them over Purdue in the Big Ten and then having them number four in the preseason AP poll, which I know – usually doesn't stand up very well once you talk about postseason AP poll versus preseason. I get it, but it just the consensus was that Michigan State's a national title contender. I never understood why, because they lose a pretty key starter. They don't address the front court other than a very raw freshman who it started to sound like Izzo didn't have a lot of trust in, clearly doesn't. And the backcourt is good, but that backcourt lost 13 games last year and made a Sweet 16, but you know, lost in the Sweet 16 and beat Marquette and Chaka Smart in the tournament to get there. Just never understood it, and I feel somewhat validated by their opening night performance that I might have been on the right track there.
Yeah, you and I both were talking about.
Yep, and you agreed.
You and I both discussing that probably too high there in the top five as far as national goes. And one more note on Xavier Booker before we look around the rest of the league is that I had seen Tom Izzo mention that he was late to something pre-Tennessee, which is why he didn't play as much in that exhibition game. I think someone even posted that it might have been the shoot-around for their game against the Vols, and then Booker didn't get a lot of minutes in that one, didn't play a lot. I think he had 5 minutes in the opener against James Madison. And while he's talented, especially offensively, in terms of his skill and his overall upside, he is, number one, still have some things in terms of his strength to get better at, but also there's been some questions in terms of maybe work ethic and that kind of stuff. And we'll see if there's any other off-the-court things with him as things progress. One night, probably won't learn a lot about them tonight in terms of Southern Indiana, but they play Duke next week, and we'll see what that looks like.
Yep.
As far as other teams in the Big Ten, other notables, Kyle, in terms of your stances preseason, I know you felt pretty strongly about Indiana being...
They got off to a good start, I must say that. Most of them did, but one game.
Indiana won 69-63.
Yeah.
We're able to survive a close game with Pat Chambers' Florida Gulf Coast squad. Indiana, on the whole, didn't look great in that game.
No.
And it kind of spoke to, I think it speaks to your and just the overall general reality for Indiana is that their backcourt is very thin, and you wonder about how much scoring power, even though Trey Galloway led them in scoring with 16. I don't know if he's going to be that guy a lot of times, but what do you think about the Hoosiers?
I mean, pretty much everything I was concerned about with them played out for 32 of the 40 minutes in that game when they played the lineup with Mbako, Renault, where they had Renault. Florida Gulf Coast is a team that basically played like five out and just spread it and tried to shoot. And they had Renault chasing shooters, and that went horribly. And Florida Gulf Coast abused that. And Mbako looked terrible in his first game. It just, and he's talented as heck. He's going to have some big games. But they play him at the three next to those two front court
six,
pieces.
Eight.
And it just, it's, he was horrible defensively and was lost and is just out of position. And he wasn't making shots, so that didn't really help the cause. So Woodson benched him, and they put in their other freshman guard, Gabe Cupps, with Galloway and Johnson, and that's what actually won them the game because they actually looked like a real lineup that actually worked together when they did that. So, yeah, there's talented pieces, but, like, Khalil Ware looked good, but that's – the fit is horrible to me. I just don't like it at all. In the backcourt, I don't think Xavier Johnson is a top tier. He's a good player. He's not at like the Jameer Young, Boo Booey top point guard in the conference level that can mask a bunch of spacing issues and get you a bucket one-on-one consistently. And Galloway is just, like you said, he's not going to average 16 this year. He had a good game, but the backcourt is just so thin and the front court just doesn't work. I watched some of that game, and I just found myself saying, yep, this is what I envisioned it looking like, and it's not screaming tournament team to me as of now. It might down the road, doesn't as of now.
It's not screaming it to KenPom either. I was surprised looking this up today. I stumbled into it. I don't even remember how I ended up. I was messing around looking at Oakland, looking at Illinois, and then I was like, let's look at Indiana as far as what they did. KenPom projects them to go 16-14. They might not even make the NIT. Michigan last year won 18 games, and they were a surefire NIT team. Isn't that crazy?
It is crazy. I don't know if I'd go that low on them, but I don't think they're going to be very good. And I think their non-conference schedule is pretty difficult.
Tough.
They play UConn and Kansas, I know of for sure.
And Auburn.
Whew. Yeah. Yeah, they could. They could lose 14 games. I wouldn't be surprised. I just don't think I don't think that roster works.
They might have one of those records that we've seen Michigan have early in those seasons when they've one of those years they battled back and ultimately made the tournament when they had Diabate and Caleb Houston, and then obviously last year they didn't do that. But here coming up, they'll face UConn later this month, and then their start of the Big Ten, they've got Maryland at home and then at Michigan. I want to talk about Michigan here pretty shortly. After that, it's Auburn on a neutral floor and then hosting Kansas.
It could be
dicey. And I don't see Trey Galloway being a marquee scorer for them. And Xavier Johnson is a nice point guard when healthy as far as on-ball defense, can pass, and he's His 3-point percentage on his career is like 35%, so he's decent, but he's not like
the ugliest form I've ever seen. I'll tell you that much.
He's not a big time shot maker, and it's going to be an interesting experiment for Mike Woodson and company. Let's talk about Michigan. Michigan projected to be 11th in the Big Ten, coming off a year, as we talked about, where they made the NIT last year. They look pretty darn good. Number one, the precursor to that was the news that they beat Marquette in their closed exhibition, their closed scrimmage, which, of course, you never know the context of, you know, how much was Marquette trying to win. But I know that they put up a boatload of points, and then they face UNC Asheville, and they dominate them 99-74. Doug McDaniel, who I liked last year, had a great game. He goes for 22 points, 8 assists. Olivier Nkamwa, the transfer from Tennessee, 25 points, 7 boards. Overall, Michigan, it's early, but looking like a better team, maybe even considerably, than what they're projected to be.
Yeah, I kind of had the thought in the back of my mind all offseason looking at their roster, like, this might not be all that bad of a team. They've got potential. And then Doug McDaniel looked like an all-conference point guard in this first game. So if he can play like that every night, I think Michigan could be a pretty surefire tournament team. Like that 1-2, if you're not going to get the two performances you got from McDaniel and Kamwa every game.
Mm-hmm.
But if those two can be a true 1-2 punch for that team, and then the role pieces around them like Burnett and Reed.
Terrence Williams. He's been disappointing the last two seasons.
Just kind of fit in around him. Like, yeah, that could be a solid team that is going to sneak up and upset a couple of these top teams in the conference. Like, yeah, it really, I think to me, it all depends on, yeah, if Doug McDaniel is an all-conference first or second team level point guard, I think that is what Michigan needs to have a really good season.
Of course, they'll want to make the tournament. And we'll see what Juwan's long-term future is there in Ann Arbor. There's a lot of questions about that.
The other point about how great they looked on night one, Juwan Howard was not yet back on the sidelines for it. Yeah. Phil Martelli was.
I still don't think they're a very deep team, so I think that could hurt them definitely for sure. But I think they got a chance, especially in what should be a softer middle of the pack, in my opinion, of the Big Ten, for them to climb up a little bit more. But on the note, one final thing is, like, it would be very Michigan, and kind of one thing that's really hampered Juwan, for Doug McDaniel to be so good this year that he goes pro after 2 years. They just haven't been able to keep people there. Like, if Kobe Bufkin would have came back from last year's team, there'd be a big difference in terms of how you think. If they went McDaniel, Bufkin, with Nkamwa, with Taris Reed, like, that'd be a lot different of a team, similar to, like, if they got Diabate for 2 years versus one. So that, I'm not trying to make excuses for Juwan Howard here, but that's one thing that has definitely hurt them, is in terms of guys that have been high profile recruits just haven't stayed there a long time. Wisconsin scored a lot of points, and they actually have a big time clash with Tennessee tomorrow night.
Do they really?
In Madison.
Huh.
Yeah, that's gonna be
isn't that game on Peacock?
Is it?
That's what I thought I saw.
It is. Yep. 8 p.m. on Peacock.
Gosh.
Get your subscriptions today. Venmo Kyle, who can send you the link. But we don't see Wisconsin put up 105 points a whole lot. They did against Arkansas State in their opener. And that was even with Connor Asesian going down with an injury. He hurt his back and only played 5 minutes. I know he's questionable for the game against the Vols tomorrow night. But do you take too much out of – probably not as far as Wisconsin goes, but – that's a different offense, at least in terms of what we're used to seeing.
I do kind of take a little bit out of it for the sole reason of the last, like, 3 to 4 Wisconsin teams couldn't score 105 against anybody. Who cares who the opponent is?
In 5-on-0?
They were never going to score 105 points. So the fact that this team comes out on opening night, regardless of opponent, puts 105 on them, raises an eyebrow for me, like, I don't want to believe that this Wisconsin team's going to be good, but I think they kind of might be.
Yeah.
I think the AJ Store addition is so huge for them.
Yep.
He just gives them such a different look to that lineup, a true athlete that can go and get a bucket. And it's not what you're used to seeing from a Wisconsin player, but it's what they desperately need in that lineup.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a great point.
And I think they could end up being – the fact with what Greg Gard has done with much less, like, this roster with the continuity and the pieces and adding a big time transfer, I think he could do some decent things with it.
I agree. Yeah, 15 points in the opener for AJ Storr. Chucky Hepburn, who I still don't think is, well, I wouldn't say he's one of the best point guards in the Big Ten, but he's decent. He goes for 20. Tyler Wall, we know he's good. Storr, I think, both in terms of offensively, but also like defensively, should help them because they've had problems with, oh, you got an athletic wing or big guard. Wisconsin is screwed.
Yes.
In recent years.
Great point.
That could change maybe with AJ Storr being able to check some guys with a little bit more athleticism. Let's look also around the league. Maybe some quick hitters here.
Quick hitter, Purdue was absolutely dominant, and they're going to win the conference. Don't overthink it.
Okay.
That's what I mean, I'll say about that.
98-45 against Samford. I think Braden Smith and Fletcher Loyer are going to be pretty good this year. I mean, all things considered, as freshmen, they were that last year. Of course, later in the season, they tailed off and had turnover issues, especially against Fairleigh Dickinson. But, yeah, I mean, Zach Edey's a monster. And
I think Smith especially could be great this year because I just – what he did last year, I get it that playing next to Zach Edey is pretty – you know, you're going to look pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Playing pick and roll with Zach Edey as a point guard. But Braden Smith, what he did last year, just kind of coming out of nowhere, being this unheralded, his next best offer was like Akron or something like that when mm-hmm. he committed to Purdue. And he was pretty darn good as a freshman. Now, I get it. Late in the year, he kind of ran out of gas and really had trouble when teams pressured him in the backcourt. But I think that's something you can really just grow at, especially with a full offseason. Like, He's the guy that really kind of scares me on that Purdue team. Like, if this Purdue team could actually take a step and be a national title contender, it's because he matures a ton and takes care of the ball better and just gets a whole lot better from what was already a pretty good freshman year, and I think he could do that.
Yeah, as far as Illinois goes, I mentioned it yesterday, Illinois is hoping that Jace Butler is going to be their Braden Smith in terms of that unheralded recruit who shows up and like, oh, man, who was this guy? I didn't notice him in any recruiting rankings. But, yeah, I think that Smith is a guy that is, you know, he's tough. He's a tough guy on the ball and can make good decisions, and Loyer can score. I think he's got a chance now that, you know, his body's developed a little bit more and just kind of going to be used to the wars of the Big Ten a little bit more.
I was kind of shocked when I saw that he shot 33% from three last year because it seemed like he had a ton of big shots.
He did.
And he's going to get so many open looks playing around Zach Edey. Like, he screams 40% three-point shooter at some point in his career to me. So mm-hmm. I could see that in the cards as well.
Rutgers goes down to Princeton. Princeton did make the Sweet 16 last year, but I know you mentioned off the air earlier this week, Kyle, that they lost two of their better players off of last year's team.
I think they're two best, yeah. The one guy I cannot remember. It was an extremely long and hard to pronounce name, but he was like a point forward for them who's now on an NBA G League team. He's gone.
Oh, yeah. I see his name, and I don't want to even try it.
It's Tosan something.
Tosan Evbouvan. Evbouvan.
Good try.
Evbouvan. Tosan. Yeah, Tosan was a 6'8". 220 guy for them last year. I didn't think, like, going into the year, we talked about it. I respect the heck out of Steve Peichel. I think that it's going to be probably a gritty, hard-nosed team that at the rack is going to be feisty. I just think there's less reason and less of an excuse to lose at the rack this year. It's not a very talented Rutgers team, in my opinion. You look at Cliff Amore, and I don't know what else is really going to hurt you a whole lot. So I think they're going to have a rough year. Wouldn't be surprised and actually expect that they will miss the tournament personally. And I think that they finish towards the bottom of the league before then loading up with their recruiting class.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, just looking at their roster, it's not very good. And I think I kind of wanted to believe that they were going to be the same type of scrappy, really good defensive team that's going to upset Purdue once and upset this other team and find their way to 10 to 10-11 wins in conference play. I don't know if I see it with this roster. You don't have a Paul Mulcahy. You don't have a Caleb McConnell. You don't have a Ron Harper Jr. You don't have a Geo Baker on this team. Cliff Amore's good, but you're never going to run offense through him. He's going to be more of a defensive anchor for you. I don't know how far that can get you when you don't really have an offensive player that you're at all scared of when you look up and down this roster. I'm kind of... I've kind of flipped. Even just, I don't want to read too much into one game because I still think there's a chance that they could pick off a couple teams at home with the way that they play, but I'm kind of starting to lean your way, like this could be a bad Rutgers team.
Let's do a couple more quick ones before we catch a break. Iowa hanging 110 on North Dakota. It's not a good North Dakota team. They beat them by 40-plus.
That tells me absolutely nothing about Iowa. It's what they do every year.
It is what they do. They had those November games against maybe nobody, and they put up 100 points. I wish I took the over. I think their over-under was like 92 and a half as far as team total. But they hit 12 threes. They shoot 50% from beyond the arc. It's a talented offensive team to an extent. I know that, you know, Peyton Sanford, I respect as a shooter. I think he puts up 21 points in that game, hits three threes, has nine rebounds. Ben Krike has a nice debut as a transfer from Valpo, 6'9", big man, 18 points. He'll have to do it, obviously, against better competition. I think this is a team that, of course, is going to have to show it against a better opponent, but will be a team that can put up points. I just feel like that's the MO of Fran McCaffrey squads, even when they lose some impactful pieces. They'll have nights where they can outscore you. We'll see how bad their defense actually is, and then we'll see if Krike can battle on the inside, because that's kind of been that could be a difference maker for you, where there were times where I didn't feel like Rabracha did that very well in his first stint with Iowa, but obviously he developed into a guy that was pretty serviceable for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be your classic Iowa team that's going to average 78 points a game, give up 77, and they're going to be a 9 seed in the NCAA tournament. I don't love their roster, but I just think that they're probably going to just hang around and be a decent team all year. Just kind of what they do. They're going to be great offensively. I think the key is going to be Krike and what he does for them, because Iowa's had some good front court pieces here the last 2 years. But I just, yeah, that told me nothing. I kind of came into the year thinking Iowa would be decent, not great.
Yep.
And I knew they were going to be good offensively because that's what they do. Knew they were probably going to be terrible defensively, and I don't know if that necessarily changed my mind, them playing North Dakota. So that's pretty much Iowa basketball for you.
There you have it. Yeah, let's catch one more break. We'll wrap up the show. I do want to get to Wade's text on the U of I Atlanta League text line. I know he's been texting in recently about Jeremiah Fears, a few others in terms of asking for an update there. So I'll share a few thoughts before we end out the show. This is The Drive.
Hi, I'm Tyler Weaver, president of Carpet Weavers Flooring and Furniture Gallery. It's time to come home to Carpet Weavers. We don't want you to just like your new floors. We want you to love them. From waterproof floors and carpet to furnitures and design advice, we've got a team of experts on your side. We'll get you the best price and the best quality products. And complete your home with furniture and accessories. Buy it all with free financing too. Come home to Carpet Weavers, where floors, furniture, and family meet.
Our veterans will be honored on Saturday, November 11th. Behind Old Orchard in Savoy, the CU Elks Club will host the Richard L. Pittman Detachment for the Marines birthday and have a full-on military ball with our own Diane Ducey, involved as MC and DJ for the event. Reach out if you'd like to contribute or know someone who may want to participate as we thank our veterans for their service at Stevie J Broadcasting. Find details at steviejay.com.
Join Salt and Light for our second annual Praise to Raise coming up Thursday, November 9th at the Vineyard Church in Urbana, presented by Copper Creek Contractors. Area churches will come together as one to lead an awesome night of praise and worship. You'll get to hear stories from folks impacted by the work of Salt and Light and learn about the exciting changes we have coming and how you can partner with us in changing lives and transforming our community. Buy tickets for just $10 online at saltandlightministry.org or in person at either of our two locations.
You're listening to WSJK ESPN 93.5 Tuscola, Champaign, Urbana, your home for the St. Louis Cardinals.
And I wish I had more for you, Kyle, but that's pretty much all I know at this point. Finishing up here on The Drive with Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. It's get right to it. Wade asks about Jeremiah Fears. I know we had a text about him yesterday. Couldn't get to that, unfortunately. But let's do it right now before we end the show. Do you think Draven Gibbs, Lawhorn, Nico, and Jace, that being Jace Butler, will deter Jeremiah Fears from committing? I do not. I don't think that. I do think that Gibbs Lawhorn is obviously going to be a big part of Illinois' future and is somebody that they hope this season is successful enough for him in terms of him seeing a role, him having that those moments throughout a season that satisfy him that he wants to stick around in Champaign. That's always tough when you have a freshman and you're on a veteran team. And do they ride it out in terms of, you know, being happy and not getting overly frustrated with the situation, with the staff? When that happens, when, you know, hey, it's a tight game and Brad Underwood trusts Justin Harmon more, at least at this stage, and so on and so forth. So we'll see how that goes. But ideally for Illinois, Dre Gibbs Lawhorn is going to be a big part of that backcourt, especially next year when you lose a lot. We'll see as far as what Nico's development looks like. Jace Butler's a guy that they're very high on, and as Brad Underwood spoke about yesterday in terms of being Big Ten ready with his body, thinks he can at least come in and be a factor. My latest read on Jeremiah is that while the reclass decision is still something he has to make, I'm getting the vibe around Illinois that they pretty clearly prefer him in 25, and they're having those conversations to try to make sure that the expectations align. I think that's the biggest thing in the Jeremiah Fears recruitment, is that what the Fears family expects and hopes for aligns enough with what Illinois sees forward. And as that goes, I think they feel like him staying in high school for another season is important for his development, important for his entry point into college and not having him go too soon. And then also, like, he is highly thought of, even like already has, and I've heard this from, you know, people that are outside of the Fears camp. I've heard it from third party people who don't have any affiliation to it that, hey, you know, NBA scouts know who Jeremiah Fears is. They think he's really talented. They think he's got like a, in terms of his offensive skill set, there's a lot there already that if he gets the body right, if he just develops as he could be a real factor in terms of being an NBA draft prospect earlier than, you know, a 4-year player. So, but at the same time, you don't want to have the expectation, especially if you're going to reclass, of, hey, he's going to come in as a guy who should be a high school senior and be a one and done. That's not realistic. Nope. That's not something that Illinois wants to sign up for, because that's just going to lead to disappointment and a guy that may spend 1 year in your program, be unhappy, transfer, and then really go splash with somebody else. So I think right now, I know we're running up against it. We can talk about this maybe more later in the week, but I think Illinois is in the best position as of right now. I think that they want him in 25, but what does that look like? If he's going to go in 25, does he still commit in January, which is kind of what he has set out there right now?